Kate Remley received a PhD in electrical and computer engineering from Oregon State University in 1999. Shortly afterwards, she joined the Electromagnetics Division of the National Institute of Standards and Technology, Boulder, Colorado office as an electronics engineer. Her research includes wireless systems and developing methods for improved radio communications for the public safety community. She joins us today to discuss how robotics measure up during search and rescue incidents. Thank you for joining us, Kate.
Thank you, Mary Rose.
Let's jump right in. Do robots have the potential for providing search and rescue assistance to first responders?
Well, the first responder community is very interested in using robots in a number of situations where it may be too dangerous for a human to be involved in an incident. For example, in the case of a chemical release or a building collapse, or currently robots are being used by the bomb disposal community, in fact. So in cases where we don't want to send a human being in because of some sort of a, you know, environmental condition, robots have the possibility of really helping the response community.
Okay, and most robots, not all, are controlled wirelessly, and I'm wondering if there are any issues with interference or signal loss?
Well, in fact, that's one of my main areas of research out here in the Electromagnetics Division. Many robots are actually controlled using a tether, some sort of a wire that can be used to send video back from the robot to the operator. But more and more, responders would like to use robots wirelessly. This gives them the freedom to go into some sort of a rubble pile or go longer distances, go into a building, something like that. And there are some issues with wireless communications. There are three main impairments that wireless devices experience, and those basically can be classified as reduction in signal strength. So if you go inside of a building, I think we've all had this happen with our cell phones, you go inside of a building, the shielding or the signal reduction as you go through a wall or some sort of a structure means that you lose communication with, for example, an incident commander outside of a building. So that's a serious issue, especially in the case of things where we want to send a robot into a tunnel, which is, you know, below the earth, so there's a lot of signal reduction, or in the case of a building collapse where there is a lot of building material that can reduce the signal level. The second impairment that's very common in wireless environments is called multipath, and that involves reflections of signals off of buildings or other structures. And those signals can interfere, cause self-interference, essentially, with a wireless signal. And that can be have an impact on wireless communications, mainly in outdoor-to-outdoor situations. Sometimes, as you're going into a large building, you may encounter something like a significant reflective, like in a factory environment or something. Signals may reflect significantly. The third main impairment, and this can be a significant issue that's facing all kinds of emergency response organizations, is interference. So will wireless devices that are being transmitted on the same frequency interfere with the signal that you're trying to transmit as a responder, trying to control a robot that's going into a building? So some of the robots that are being deployed right now use what we call the unlicensed frequency bands, and that means that there are a number of wireless devices that are operating in the same frequency band. So these unlicensed devices have the potential to then interfere with the critical communication that the responder is trying to conduct between the incident commander and the robot, essentially.
Okay, and now is NIST currently working on any set of performance goals for robots that are used in search and rescue?
Well, NIST actually has quite an extensive program that's underway right now. It's being funded by the Department of Homeland Security Office of Standards. And the issue is that there's all this great technology out there. Robots, in particular, you know, hold the promise for saving lives of responders. But there are very few performance standards that exist, especially tailored specifically for the response community. So DHS saw the lack and has funded NIST to engage in an extensive program, not just on the wireless communications link for robots, but also for the other types of performance, the physical performance. How well do they operate on a slanted, inclined plane? Do they go upstairs very well? Can they find their way in the dark? Are they able to recognize objects and transmit that information back to the operator in typical emergency responder environments? So what NIST has done is set up a series of field exercises that have exercises, little stations that robots go through that simulate various emergency responder scenarios. For example, a rubble pile or as I mentioned already, trying to recognize an object in the dark. So NIST will have NIST scientists essentially stationed at these different stations, and the robot will then be deployed and be rated on how well it can essentially get through an obstacle course that NIST has developed. The idea is by getting this information, the manufacturers can then produce, you know, next generation versions of robots that are more applicable to response scenarios. And it will also then let NIST help develop standards that can guide response organizations in purchasing robots that are most appropriate for their particular scenario.
In the area of communications, what performance requirements were specified by first responders? What were they looking for in these robots?
Well, again, it will depend on the application of the particular response agency. Most response agencies at least want to be able to control the robot in a line-of-sight condition. So perhaps send the robot downrange, you know, even up to a kilometer, and be able to control the robot and receive video back from the robot. So we call that sort of a standoff operation. And another very common scenario is just a non-line-of-sight situation where a robot goes downrange and then goes behind a building, something like that. So, for example, if you're in a bomb squad agency, you don't want to be, you know, right in the path of the suspected explosive. You want to be around the corner. So you want to make sure that you can control your robot as it goes around a corner. There are a few other very common scenarios that the responders are interested in, things like tunnel deployment, the building collapse deployment, those sorts of things.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about interference. Can you tell me what your research have found regarding line of sight versus non-line of sight use of the robots?
Well, I mentioned that many of the robots that are being developed right now use these unlicensed frequency bands. And the issue there is that other commercial applications or even, you know, consumer applications use the same frequency bands. For example, your wireless network at home operates in a certain frequency band that's called unlicensed. And some of the robot communication systems that are out there right now operate on those same frequency bands. So there can be an issue with a consumer device inadvertently, entangling with some sort of an emergency response scenario and essentially shutting the robot down. The other issue there is that robots, in many scenarios you want to deploy two or more robots simultaneously, and you don't want those to interfere with each other either. So the radio interference, if we have interference on our wireless local area network at home, it's inconvenient. The network starts running slower. But in the case of the emergency responder, they really need to know that their system is going to operate 100% or as close to 100% as we can ensure without slowing down or dropping a call or something like that. So the interference issue can be very serious. And we have found in some of our initial field tests that this can be a significant issue.
Okay, sounds good. And then finally, my final question, what options exist for mitigating some radio interference? I know we talked a little bit about interference, but what are some strategies to avoid it?
Well, I guess one of the easiest would be to not to use the unlicensed frequency bands. the issue there is that there is only a very limited amount of spectrum that's available to emergency responders that's been allocated by the Federal Communications Commission. So that is a strategy. Robots would like to transmit not just the control of the robot, which is a very small amount of data that gets transmitted, but also video, which is quite data intensive. So there is an issue with, you know, bandwidth and that the robots themselves need a significant chunk of spectrum to be able to transmit this video signal. But there is a limited amount of licensed frequency spectrum available to emergency response community, and that would be one option. Frequency coordination has been used for years with handheld radios in the response community, and that is you know, a very reliable and robust way of mitigating interference, again, except when response agencies come from other jurisdictions. Then coordination of frequencies on the spot can be a little bit challenging.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Kate.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Mary Rose.
That completes our podcast. This is Mary Rose Roberts. Thank you for listening.